Inseparable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
It's Tuesday night with our admirable friends. Welcome.
Tuesday, December 16th.
It is.
It is, right before Christmas.
It is, at that.
Hope we have some listeners tonight.
I do
busy
too.
With the holidays.
I mean, it's hard.
Well, we know we have a couple because we did have some write-in, some really good input that we're going to discuss on tonight's show, being Alex.
Persistence.
How to build persistence.
Well, the beauty is it's on podcast. So if they can't listen to it live, they certainly can just, you know,
Yes. Listen
to it at a later date when they sit down
and
relax.
I love podcasts. I sit sometimes at my desk and just let them just play it on kind of in the background, and, you know.
That's nice you have that luxury to do that.
Listen, you can plug it in with these cars now on Bluetooth. You can podcast and have it going through your radio so you don't have to, you know, tune into anything.
Yes. Why be mindful of the moment when you can listen to a podcast?
I agree.
So, tonight's show is a good one, the persistence. Something we're all looking for, in particular persistence. In this way of life, of building our inner mind qualities, right? I mean, I think we can still apply persistence to other things, whatever we do externally. And, you know, I had some people say they didn't quite get the apathy, the opposite side of persistence.
Well, maybe we can kind of deconstruct it and lay it out there.
Yeah. You got another word for apathy?
Complacency.
Complacency?
Mm. Maybe.
Yeah.
No? Yes,
no, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I definitely don't like the word lazy for the opposite of persistence, and we're going to talk about that tonight.
Right.
I don't think anybody should be considered lazy.
You got
to get to the root cause of where the lack of motivation is.
Right.
Yeah, persistence has this firmness behind it that it's on a foundation that is almost rock solid, and so it's kind of that built up to it. And I see apathy as not. It's almost like you're kind of, you know, there's some bubbles in that foundation.
Well, I see it as doubt. And that goes back to the determination and doubt part.
Okay. Well, let's talk into the whole show.
I don't want to tip my hand too soon.
We're
going to
wrap this up? Or where's the outro now?
Yeah,
actually, what I'm
going to
suggest tonight, that we do the reverse. Instead of doing the conceptual part of persistence in the educational part of the show, we go into the body of experience. You know, we usually go concept, practice, understand.
Mm-hmm.
Tonight, we're going to do practice, concept, understand. So before we talk about the concepts, we're going to try to talk about the practical side of persistence and share some of our listeners' experience with persistence, have a little roundtable on that, and then work our way into the conceptual side in the second half, kind of the educational component of the show. However, before we get into the body of persistence, it's time for gratitudes. And actually, what we're doing with our format is, because of our menu with the online system, gratitudes are under generosity. And since they're under the menu of generosity, we have three different menu choices in our journaling, our electronic journaling on the system, under generosity. And I think it's best that if we pull up all three dimensions of generosity and pull up what our users on the system have decided to share publicly. And that would be acts of generosity would be one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two would be acts of generosity of things that we individually do that we consider generous and not being tied to an exchange. And then we have appreciations, then we have gratitudes. So let's start with acts of generosity and go around the table and let's pick a generosity, Carol.
All right. I have the first one that I picked up on was had guests over for our house, had guests over our house for dinner. They saw that as a tangible act with no sense of obligation, and they enjoyed the time together. So that was nice.
And again, to recap for our audience and some of the members that might not be using the journaling, this was done by a user. We don't know the name who did it because it's an anonymous social network. However, this user took the time to go into their journal and record that act of generosity. Some of them are taking that 7-day challenge we gave them down at Fort Worth Meditation serious. I've noticed the entries this week.
Nice.
Alex, act of generosity. Did you pick one you like?
I've got one here. Gave money to the YMCA so that others may take care of themselves in the way I am lucky enough to be able to afford. Tangible. And when they were reflecting upon this action, oddly enough, this was less rewarding than some more intangible acts of kindness. I did feel some sense of obligation from peer pressure.
Interesting.
Yeah, interesting to see kind of that that dilemma, but still to see it as an act of generosity, and I think it qualifies in my book.
And no sense of obligation.
Mm-hmm.
This action I liked was talking with a person who looked distressed.
That caught my eye, too.
Yeah. Well, it was an intangible act, and it was no sense of obligation, and this admirable friend says that their reflection was hopefully it helped make their day. And the reason I like that is that kind of is almost a step beyond generosity into the compassion column.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we do generous acts, we're doing them without a whole bunch of conditions. It's almost like goodwill. You're throwing it out there without a lot of conditions. But when we actually go out of our way to help somebody that we think is stressed or in need, that's starting to get close to a compassionate act.
First of all, what caught my eye about this particular one was that the person had the wherewithal, the mindfulness to see that the person was in distress.
Yes.
So often during the day, we're like bumper cars and we tend not to, we share the same space, whether it's in work or wherever in the home, and we're oblivious.
Why do you think that?
Well, I think we're probably working on our own world and our own deal.
That's right.
And so often we don't look at somebody else's world.
So obvious, right? We're asking, we're probably somewhere asking for something and not necessarily in our own world kind of contemplating the way our mind is working and learning about that. It's more like we're operating out of autopilot on our wants, our excessive wants.
And going back to this one is if you see a person that looked distressed, that's a nonverbal communication. So that's one step further. I mean, the person isn't actually verbalizing. I'm just, you know, it's a nonverbal. They look distressed. The person interpreted it like they needed an admirable friend.
And you're doing the same thing they are. You're picking this act of generosity apart, and you're seeing it from a different angle.
Well, I told you it really spoke to me when I saw it, so I'm glad you brought that one up.
Cool. All right, let's go around to the appreciations, which are the second particular journal entry under the generosity column. Carol.
Oh, let's see. I like this one. I appreciate working with professionals who take pride in their work. Boy, do I like that one. That really does make a difference when you work with those that take pride in their work.
Yeah. And that particular person wasn't appreciating so much. Well, he was taking time to notice, or she was taking time to notice the people they work with. Alex, which one caught your eye this week?
Good appreciation here. When I know that someone has listened to my point of view before speaking.
Ooh.
That's nice.
That is nice.
It's nice. I think because, you know, maybe so often, you know, a lot of times you're in conversation and you're sitting there and you're saying something to somebody and they cut you off, and then you're not going to sit there and say, hey, don't cut me off. But you take note of it saying, oh, gosh, I don't feel they were listening to me. I wasn't even finished saying what I was saying. So when you do have somebody that's sitting there and really letting you speak, and then you almost pause after, you know, expecting them to say something, and really they were just listening to you, I think that's something to be appreciative of.
Cool. And this one is an opportunity to go meet with admirable friends tonight. This person was expressing appreciation. So that must have been last Thursday night before we went down to the class. So they appreciated the opportunity to go meet them. That's a subtle appreciation, isn't it? Versus in arrears saying, I met with them.
You know, in my, back when I was studying in anthropology and studying different cultures, we looked at time and how different people in societies use their time and what it really said about them. The activities and the actions they do, what that says about what they have access to, what kind of time do they have to themselves. Because as hunter and gatherers and things back then, you didn't have time to go and to do certain things because you had to go and get the food and bring it back and prepare it and all that stuff. So I see what this person's saying. The opportunity to go and do an activity such as that when there are important things to do, I think, is definitely something to be appreciative of. So very, very astute there.
Okay, last component part of generosity is gratitudes. And gratitudes are the recognizing and reflecting on the kind action of others. Carol. Which one struck your eye this week?
Inviting me to share a dinner and a good conversation.
Okay.
They trusted the intentions, they know went out of their way, and they reflected on the action by saying it was quality time with other people, a key aspect for internal fulfillment. So, that's nice when you can make that human connection.
Yeah, and quality time with other people, a key aspect for internal fulfillment. So they've linked it to their own well-being, and it looks like they've internalized that, so they probably extend and share a dinner with somebody else as a result of that action. Ooh. Bringing attention to it, huh?
Yeah.
Alex?
Got one here, the gratitude. The action was for working unsociable hours away from home. I trust their intentions and reflecting upon it. Everything I need and much that I don't is right there because these people delivered it. So, and I think this is a great one, especially around the holidays, because I was out and about with the family doing some shopping and everything like that. And around the holidays, I think you tend to forget that there are people actually working to allow you to go out there and to do the shopping and to purchase things and to get the fuel you need for your car and, you know, feed yourselves and do all that. There are people still working during that time. And often they do it because it pays extra or they need the hours or whatever. So especially during the holidays, I think this is a great gratitude and, definitely be grateful for those people that are putting in the extra effort.
Okay, this gratitude, this particular user says that the action was smiling faces and friendly greetings early every morning, encouraging me to be persistent in my pursuit of a healthy lifestyle. They trusted their intentions, and their reflection was, yet more people I have been taking for granted that I will thank in person. Now, there's a benefit of the gratitude right away.
Yep.
By entering it, paying attention to it. that's really nice. Yet more people I have been taking for granted that I will thank in person. So there's a real constructive action as a result of that gratitude.
Mm-hmm. I would say the three of us here could all say we're pretty grateful for the people putting this stuff in here and sharing it with everybody.
Absolutely.
Well, first of all, we should be grateful they're testing the system because we're at the infancy stage of Admirable Friends building this.
And we're trying to prove this up. We are trying to prove this up to a lot of people to say, you know, here is an actual application and a way to practice these qualities.
On your own,
on
as
your
well
own,
as sharing.
As well as sharing.
Anonymously, which is no one's doing that on the internet.
Right. So we're a little bit on the bleeding edge here, but we are extremely grateful for everybody that's helping us in there and put those things in. And I hope it's doing everything for your practice. I can see it in the words.
Yeah.
Well, it inspires me. It inspires me when I see it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, somebody else is out there doing it. Every time I go, I look at those. Before I make my entries each day, I look to the public gratitudes. it does inspire me. Yeah, I like to see people involved with the same thing I'm doing. Helps me keep going.
Yeah, absolutely.
No man is an island. No woman is an island, right? Okay, let's go through the letters. Let's jump into the body of it. And just who wants to take a definition so we can just minimally frame what we're going to discuss today?
You want the definition of persistence?
Yes.
So the definition of persistence is the quality of mind that displays firm or obstinate continuance in a course of action despite difficulty or opposition.
Okay. Alex, why don't you take the first admirable friend that wrote into us on persistence?
Okay.
And the questions were basically what actions do you... are you persistent with?
Yeah, what kind of actions would you classify as showing persistence and which ones...
Not,
I guess, you know, and that's a great way. If we don't want to say the word apathy, just say not persistent.
Yeah, but the thing I'm trying to find, and I hope we can find through reading through these, is there's a reason why people aren't persistent besides them just inherently being lazy or not, you know, sure, doing anything. We got to look at the causation of this. And this is where we're going to allow people to have a free pass, so to speak. They're going to be way too hard on themselves.
And this is...
You hear it all the time. Exactly. I'm not persistent enough.
But because of the truth, because yes, I think it's in the truth quality, I'm going to say, stick my neck out there and say, if you're not persistent, then you really need to be a little bit more honest and figure out why it is you don't have the ship pointing in the right direction.
True.
Because, and the only reason...
I'm trying to give people a free ride, and she is pointing her finger at me like it's a loaded gun while she's...
You know what?
I just got the bamboo stick to the back.
Because I am the biggest culprit of that, and that's my realization. And if I can, you know, put the mirror up and say, you know, what is it about you that... lacks persistent, because I tend to the apathetic side.
Well, I know, and that's what I'm saying. The listeners are used to the loose guitar being yours and the tight guitar being mine. And listen to you, you're all wound up.
Wow. That's all there is to it.
You know, you had me when you started off with that. It's a truth quality.
You had me after hello.
You had me after hello. And then,
I'm wondering if people look at that and say, why is it under truth? Why is persistence under truth?
We're going to swing back to that.
I agree completely with you. I think when we frame this under the truth quality, I think it's almost a little bit better to look at it under the quality that it is versus looking specifically at the characteristic as persistence.
Yeah, but it's truth as it relates to your conviction.
Exactly, truth as it relates to it. And so that...
Be true to your conviction.
It was kind of what you were saying, buddy, where we get hard on ourselves. And when we look at it as a truth quality, we distance ourselves from taking personal quarrels when we're not persistent. When we lack that persistence, when we see where it's really tied to in the truth, how it's tied to upholding to our overall determinations and convictions.
Conviction or determination. Right. I use conviction and determination interchangeably.
And I'm not saying you can't give yourself a free pass, but I think the truth part of it and the realization is noting that the ladder's against the wrong wall.
Again, it's all talking from will, and there's the element of will that's involved with this. There's two aspects to this practice. There's developing and there's letting go. Okay? What you're developing is that will to make good choices going forward, but you don't walk away from your past behavior pattern traits. Your past behavior pattern traits are involved with your decision making.
That's the cliff notes. Why would you walk away? That's like the cliff notes to the story.
Well, it is, but what I'm saying is it's also sometimes a justifiable excuse why you're not doing things. And I'm not saying it's an excuse, but if you look into some of your past behaviors and you realize, let's say, for instance, you're all wound up or, you know, you've been beating yourself up for 10 years on or being surrounded by people that have influenced you on a very negative self-esteem.
Sure.
You're not going to wake up out of that self-esteem overnight. And you're just going to get more frustrated if you're going to turn around and say, I don't know why I'm not why I get down on myself so much. Mm. Well, you just got down on yourself again. Mm. Because you don't have an accurate understanding of where you are. You know, you have to take inventory realistically of where you are in life. That's taking into consideration your past karma and giving yourself a free pass on certain aspects and developing others. This is a yin and a yang deal.
Yeah.
It's letting go and taking aim. And I think the moment we get too hard, like we just brought note to you, right? all of a sudden we're developing. I saw that heavy edge of truth. And I'm saying, okay, you're right. There's an element of responsibility with making development choices. There's also a good discernment of understanding where you are right now and letting yourself a free pass at certain times. There are times where, you know, you just have to accept that you're not that great. You're just not that great. And
as a maximizer, how do you deal with
it? I deal with it all the time. And we'll get to that. We'll get to the issue of the two emotions. One of our writer talks about those. But the way I deal with it is I look into the bigger picture, and we are grown up in a country of ideals. We're the best nation on earth. We're the best country. We got the best system, you know, blah, blah, blah. Everything's the best, and we are conditioned to be the best at everything.
Mm-hmm.
That's our attitude. It's implied in the way we operate. That's a huge burden to carry, to be the best at everything. And there, you know, when you pull away from this idea of being the best, and you really look at how difficult it is to live day in and day out, the stress that we live with. Did you ever think the stress was associated with trying to be the best? Hello?
I think that has something to do with it, sure.
It does. Take it from me. I know this. You know, this is something I've stressed myself out because of striving. So, and I'm not suggesting there's not half of the deal to make good choices, but you still have to let yourself understand that you've been living under the conditioning that everything has to be the best. Instead of learning to allow, that's why that word allow and, you know, observing, and that's where your journaling and your meditation give you the opportunity to slow yourself down and be more realistic about what you can pull off. Because that persistence got us all jacked up. That's like a high energy, that's the perfect deal, isn't it?
Mm.
I'm totally persistent. Especially when we link it, listen to you, Dallas, you link it with conviction. So it's like, you know where you're going in life and you better go take off and make it happen.
Put your head down. Put your head down. You know, but I do like your point, because I think it points back to our overall practice. If you're listening in, I mean, we've said it how many weeks now? I mean, this is a practice of where you're going to have to face yourself. You're going to have to ask yourself the tough questions. You have to hold yourself accountable. And at the end of the day, it's...
beat yourself up.
You know, but you do it. It's beating yourself up in a way that I think could freeze you almost, where it's like you're enjoying taking the shots. It's like a punch drunk just sitting there taking
it. I agree with some of it. But part of it is just giving yourself a hug and say you did the best you could today. Don't you get it?
Well, you didn't know any better.
This is another side.
Obviously,
if
you knew better, you would have done it.
What's happened to you?
It's not another side of me. You've got to cultivate both emotions. You've got to.
What happened to the old buddy?
Oh,
where
wow.
is he? Where'd he go?
I said the same thing about you two. You're all jacked up here tonight. And our listeners, you know, probably jacked up with you. And they're ready to beat out. Don't you remember? You know, the Dalai Lama looked at our whole society and said, what is low self-esteem? So if we have low self-esteem and we're all stressed, I ask you, where do you think it came from? It had to come from striving. Nowhere else.
Right, but if the realization comes from knowing that the striving was because the ladder was against the wrong wall, then you just say, okay, let's move it and get on with it.
Oh, okay, so you keep the fire stoked with desire. You think it's one shift of a wall, so it's a one-trick pony. We just shift it, and all of a sudden we make a one determination, and we're going
to
be all fine in life.
No. No, no, no.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's not to say that what you said is not really important. It is.
No, I think it's in conjunction with a lot of other tools that have to come with it.
Good, because it's not a Johnny One Note program where we just
practice. No, 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 no.
Actually, if you really look at persistence, it's very dependent on many of the other mind qualities.
Well, you're bringing me right to the point that I make that. Yes, we do get hard on ourselves when we're in this persistent mode, when we don't continue with something we know that is good. But what I've begun to do when I drill down on that is really disconnect the personal I from what is, you know, in quotations, persistence, because it is tied to other qualities.
Right.
And so it's just almost, it's sitting there kind of floating, this term persistence, and it really doesn't grow or get taken hold of. Like you said, until some of the other qualities are kind of, you know, kicking it into gear.
Well, because effort, you don't just have divine effort. yes, you have desire. We're built with desire, right? But skillful effort, where it's pointed, how consistent it's pointed, how compassionate it is, how much it takes into consideration others, how patient it is. There's a lot of qualities that go into keeping that little choo-choo train going down the road.
Right.
It's not like you turn it up and you wind it into a wall. You know, you wind it up and it just goes. You know, it takes a lot in today's society. We're derailed all day long with our challenges. We're meeting bumper cars on the street. We got friends that tell us about stuff that means nothing. You know, there's a lot of distractions out there.
The truth qualities are that excellent, that check and balance on our practice, I feel. It's put in there in place so that we can actually check back in with things like our determination and discernment.
Right, we're being truthful about the determination.
Exactly.
It's not that whether we're a truthful person or not a truthful person, and that we're not being authentic if all of a sudden we miss a goal.
Right.
Right?
I think,
but don't get me wrong, I've asked that question before, and I've had people say in a group that when I ask them what authentic is, it's when I don't live up to what I said I was going to do. Mm-hmm. It's like, whoa.
Well, it's interesting. If anyone looked at the PDF or the logo we have of persistence, it's a guy it's an image pushing something up a hill.
Right.
I actually see persistence as the thing going down the hill.
Yeah.
Right.
That would be effective use.
It's going down the hill, collecting more persistence. When our actions become skillful and aligned with our determination, we become more persistent in doing those actions because we've seen it. We've seen it firsthand. So our persistence grows when our choices are skillful and we have linked them back up to our determination.
I think there's also the possibility that it goes up a hill, down a hill, at any point during the day. And that's part of the deal, is to know when to nudge it, when to hold, you know, when to let it go.
Right. We're going to go through some of those.
You know, there's a lot of nuances to being good at this mind quality. And let's read. Before we take a break, Alex, yep. Why don't you take a crack at it?
Okay. This email sent in, what kind of actions are they persistent with? The writer writes, I am developing stronger persistence in my daily meditation habit. This has involved self-talk to keep the right attitude, a focus on the value a daily session will bring to my practice. Giving priority to the Thursday night meditation class with admirable friends, I have also changed my preferred time for meditating to one that is least likely to get interrupted by outside events. On a final note, I make sure when the session is full of distractions that I just focus on the value of witnessing all the distractions.
Okay, now let's pick that letter apart. What do you guys see?
Do you hear anything? Well, I was reading it. I was hoping you were listening so you could start, but I'll
crack at it.
Yeah, have a crack.
I'm developing stronger persistence in my daily meditation habit. Okay, so we have persistence in meditation. This has involved self-talk to keep the right attitude. A focus on the value of a daily session will bring to my practice. On the value. Okay, so here's a classical case of persistence to dependence on something else. In order to be persistent meditating, and I've been training meditators, okay? Now, here's a classic case where people sit down and they just try to rough it out with their breath right away. And they have a hard time staying with a meditation practice. Notice what this writer says, that they've been working on their attitude as a condition preceding their meditation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many times I've said that during instruction. Don't just sit down and start working on your breath. Wish goodwill. Think about what you're going through, you know,
right,
and get a good attitude going before you start.
You know, it's just like, and I've listened to some guided meditations and everything, and you know my background is being a sports guy. So let me kind of frame real quick a meditation to the analogy of a sports match, if anybody's out there. Right. You don't just hop on the field of play and then just start playing. Right, there's a warm-up period, and in that period, you're getting your muscles in gear, you're getting your reflexes going, you're getting your mind right, you're preparing yourself for what's to come with the game time, right? Meditation is no different. There is a level of prep work. It can be, and it comes with just, you know, with as much as you meditate. It can be 5 minutes, it could be 15 minutes to start off with.
Let's take the example, Alex. Why do you think they tell you to take a bow and a gesture before you meditate?
They're trying to get you into that mode.
Well, in specific, it's so you're in a giving mode, that you're taking a moment to appreciate the moment.
Right.
So you remember, as I said before, our stress is all being caused by wanting mine, wanting. That means we're expecting things to come our way.
Right.
So the moment they're trying to flip you through good skill is to give a moment, a gesture.
Well, another gesture that you do when you meditate is your posture when you're sitting. Now, your posture to sit upright and alert is sort of signaling your body, what I'm about to undertake is very important. It's kind of a reverend, it's a very special thing. Right. So it takes on a certain respect.
And you're respecting your body.
Correct.
Again, there's a reason. Now, to illustrate my point. Somebody who is not using discernment, this writer has already learned through trial and error that they need to get their attitude straight before they meditate. Now, that's a level of skill, right? Mm-hmm. Now, if somebody wasn't doing this, you take somebody that's not doing it this way and they're just sitting down and they meditate and then they quit meditation because they're not doing well at it. Is it because they're lazy? Or is it because they didn't apply the skill correctly? They weren't taught correctly and they didn't understand. See, there's a condition before the persistence.
Exactly, and you're going to have to try both of those out to really see which
and
is
that the, takes patience.
And that takes patience.
So there's a lot of things before we're persistent.
Yeah.
But another thing is the writer also put a focus on a value, how they value what the practice is going to provide.
Yep. Good point, Carol.
I really like that the value a daily session will bring, not. It's different than what am I going to get out of it. It shows a certain reverence to the practice. Yep.
I've also changed my preferred time for meditating. Oh, what do? They turn around, they affect their environment. Very skillful.
How to maximize the leverage, make the leverage.
Again, a condition preceding the... And this writer's telling us what they've been persistent with. And look how much is in this short email as to how many conditions that are causing good persistency. Whereas I think at a glance, we all of a sudden just say, I wish I was persistent. I wish I was more persistent. And then when we're not, we beat ourselves up. A more discerning mind would say, what does it take to be persistent at this particular task? Well, it takes you taking a moment to reflect on your attitude. Make sure your environment's right. Actually, if you go back to the instructions, don't we say all this in our meditation instructions?
Yes.
Right? But what if you don't follow those instructions? How many times have you put something together and you bought from a store that you had to put 100 pieces together and you realize that the sixth piece didn't fit in because you didn't read the instructions?
That's never happened to me, by the way. I just want to let you know.
Oh, boy. Yeah. We're going to take a break on that one.
I like all this.
We're going to take a break and we're going to get back here on the second one. But this letter was a great one. It really was. A short paragraph. Look at the meat in it.
Thank you for sharing that. A lot of meat in there.
Yes. Let's take a break.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
And before we leave this note, we cut this little paragraph short. It's such a great note. But the final sentence, look at it. I make sure when the session is full of distractions that I just focus on the value of witnessing all the distractions. Now I'm going to put the two of you on the spot. Which mind quality is this person demonstrating with that last statement?
I see discernment.
Discernment. I was thinking.
I said it first. It's on tape. Check the podcast tomorrow.
Okay, I see discernment, but I also see equanimity.
You know, I should have known that when he asks a question like that, no matter what we say, there's no chance that answer is the right answer.
There's no right answer. You're absolutely correct.
If there's anybody who knows Buddy and has had a question asked by him out there, you know exactly what
I'm talking about.
The problem
is, when we bite for it every
Where's the discernment? Where's the discernment?
We do bite for it.
I make sure when the session is full of distractions.
Well, the discernment is in the choice of what to value. They value the witnessing of the distractions versus, another form of what's going on. Maybe fighting with your breath.
Okay, so you see the value as discernment.
Correct.
And I look at the word witnessing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? All the witnessing. That puts me in the middle and I'm just...
Yeah, absolutely.
From a position of equanimity, I'm just listening to the distractions.
Yep.
So it's both, Alex. So I'm not trying to upstand you here.
No. I knew you had something different than what was coming out of my mouth the second it came out.
Well, what does AJ say? If I were you, if I understood you, I would be you.
All right.
Okay.
On to the next.
On to the next one. Okay. Feel free to read this. Okay, I'm free to read it. Why don't you just tell me? I want to start off saying that I might have this persistency stuff all wrong, because upon reflection, I find that persistency and stubbornness tend to go hand in hand for me.
Ooh.
This is probably not the right way to think about it, because stubborn sounds like a bad thing, and I think I'm supposed to associate it with a more positive trait. At my work, one of our guiding principles is tenacious, which sounds better than stubbornness, I suppose. Maybe you can help explain this on the radio. What kind of actions are persistent? I am persistent when I am passionate about something. On a big picture level, striving for balance is something I am passionate about. This might be because balance is so hard to obtain and maintain. I have been thinking about this in relation to the two skillful emotions to balance, those being dismay and conviction. I envision these two emotions like a seesaw, with one side being dismay and the other side being conviction, and then balance in the middle as heedfulness. My seesaw is the analogy above tends to go heavy on the dismay side generally, so I have a persistent desire to try to balance the two.
Wow, okay? This is chock-a-block full here.
Okay, how about it? What do you see, Carol?
I don't know what I see.
Let me just make a quick note that I saw when they're talking about passionate about something is when they're persistent. I would link that back to a good determination. When you set a good determination, there's that passion, there's that connection with it, that bind that holds you together. So when I see something about passionate, I'm persistent when I'm passionate about something. I see that as, yeah, absolutely.
They've got the proper motivation.
You've got the proper motivation.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What about in the open paragraph? Anything you see there?
I had a question for you.
Good.
And my question is this. Is being overly persistent in the pursuit of balance, could that, is it like going past the close, so to speak?
Well, by saying overly persistent, that implies the guitar strings too tight.
Mm-hmm.
Just the word overly.
Right.
Why are you adding that prefix? Right?
But let's
talk a little bit about that balance that this writer is talking about, since we can put some context. In our website, we have, on our list in the curriculum side, we have two emotions to balance, okay? Two skillful emotions to balance. Dismay is the first emotion, and that is defined as a sense of dis-ease and alienation that comes with recognizing the superficiality of life as it's often lived, a sense of complacency and foolishness regarding our past actions and an anxious feeling to find a way out. The other emotion on the other side of the spectrum is conviction. Clarity and serene confidence in the quest for reliable happiness that keeps dismay from turning into despair. A clear sense that we can indeed find a way out of the seemingly endless cycle of stress. Can you two associate with either one of those emotions at any point?
I can. Conviction, I connect with the conviction.
You don't connect with the dismay?
It's a little bit harder for me.
That's a fair assessment. Carol? Because this writer is saying that they're leaning more towards the dismay.
Yeah, I would say maybe a little more dismay.
You do, Carol?
I think so.
But you do connect with both of those emotions.
I do. I do see it as a back and forth.
I see them as fuel of life, to be honest with you. Alex, it might be an issue of your age, too. Your dismay is not... you're still full of vim and vigor. Maybe a little bit higher on the conviction side. I don't know. Carol, what do you think? I mean, I see the both in my everyday life. I see there's plenty that's to dismay about, and there's plenty to be positive about.
I agree.
If I'm just going to be real about it, that they both exist.
They do.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I can acknowledge them both existing. I think I tend to stay more on the conviction side.
Okay, but let's talk about before we got on the show. Yeah. We were reflecting on what happened in Pakistan today. Mm-hmm. You had a lot of dismay on your face, Alex. It was almost like it was personal.
You felt, really? Yeah. I thought you were probably more dismayed.
No, I was watching you. I mean, you're saying this thing, and you were talking about how people are forced by their families to do a lot of this crazy stuff.
Yeah,
because they're being held hostage. I mean, so you looked into this. You didn't kind of avoid the dismay associated with this situation.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
But in my case, I don't necessarily look at the dismay in a gross scale like that. I look at, you know, everyday superficiality as a lost opportunity to live. I wouldn't say it's heavy dismay, Carol, but when I see us going through the motions, I kind of shake my head and say, what are we doing?
That you've missed an opportunity, sure.
You know, it's like when I sit in front of a television or whatever and watch a bad movie, I said, you just wasted 2 hours of your life right there.
Mm. Right.
Yeah, and I guess it's in times like that that, you know, when I start going down that road, you know, it puts me in a state that I beat myself up on. So I have a healthy sense of fear about going towards this.
Too deep?
Too deep down.
Or is it too long? Do you ignore it? Or do you actually touch it and then say, I got to go back to my conviction?
I touch it and I go back.
Well, that's, I think, what this writer's talking about. It's a seesaw. Here.
Right. No, and I got that. And
But don't take it for granted, Alex. There's a lot of people out there that aren't showing much dismay.
Oh no, I think.
I mean, we wouldn't have homeless people in the cities if we.
Oh yeah, I think it's symbiotic. You know, you gotta in order to have the conviction, you've got to be able to see a bit of dismay. So
yeah, I think the two emotions work together. Yeah. So what do you see? My seesaw in this analogy above tends to go heavy on the dismay side, so I generally I have persistent desire to try to balance the two. So they're very well aware of their emotions, obviously, in this letter, and they're leaning more towards a dismay side. So I think that's very healthy. So their persistency is balance, is what I'm reading here. They're being persistent. The question is, what are you persistent with? And this person's saying they're persistent with maintaining a healthy balance between those two emotions.
Yeah.
That is a great fuel for the practice. What kinds of actions are you not persistent with? This writer writes, I do not seem to have a persistent desire to restrain from being hard on myself, and as a result, I don't cut myself slack when balance is not obtained or maintained. This one must have been talking to you earlier today, Carol. Mm-hmm. I give myself a really hard time for not having figured out how to ditch delusions. Ooh, how to ditch delusions.
Mm-hmm.
I'll bet this writer takes a lot of pride on their intellect. Just the way they say ditch delusions.
Mm.
It's like that they detest delusion.
Yeah. It's almost like
you
see a car wreck coming and you just drive right into it. You know, the delusion is there, and you just kind of,
well,
you saw it, you know, it was there, it was right in front of you. How did I miss it?
Yeah.
But well, the funny thing is, you say to yourself, after the fact, I knew better. Well, if you knew better, you would have avoided it.
Yeah.
You know?
So you just didn't know better, did
so
you?
So you did. No.
Well, I mean, when
that's great, Carol.
Yeah, because when you use a term like ditch,
maybe that's
like,
the truth,
you know,
maybe that's the truth you were talking about earlier.
You know, it's like a friend coming to a party. You know, how do I ditch this person before it gets bad?
No, but when she says you get mad at yourself because you knew better,
right?
You didn't.
So then that's the free pass. It's like
no, but
if you did, you wouldn't have.
The realization is you didn't,
yeah.
And you don't.
That's
well,
what
the delusion is: the thought that you think you may have known better, right?
No,
your
delusion is not knowing what you don't know.
Right,
that's delusion,
right?
But thinking that you did.
No, you don't have to even say any more than that. No, that's deluded, Carol.
I knew
not
that
knowing
delusion.
What you don't know.
Oh man,
it's all delusion. Okay, but I need to ask a question because this keeps sticking with me over here. The word passionate, because the it seems like persistence is enough, but adding passion to the persistence is like turning the screw an extra quarter turn,
yes.
And then it just, you know, strips the screw or breaks it.
Yes.
And my question before that I was trying to ask was, does adding an extra passion, it's almost like maximizer, is adding that harmful or unskillful?
I guess it would be tempered by the rudder of determination where it's pointed.
I
kind of consider Jesus Christ and Buddha extremely passionate individuals.
Yeah.
And Gandhi. Right? It depends their purpose.
I think
depends where it's
passion
pointed.
Speaks more to the right attitude, which we were talking about.
Right.
That first one, I think passion is your attitude, kind of where you point it.
But I hear what Carol's saying too, because when you too much passion.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to get to this. If we can finish this letter, we're going to get to the too much, you know, detail, too much persistence, you know, how to calibrate that.
So is that the passionate side of persistence? Is that in passion on
top of
persistence?
I think that's what you're reading and implying.
Well, that's what
right?
I'm asking.
Yeah.
Like the amount.
You're married to a passionate person.
I'm asking.
Yeah, I think you
share,
should be is what I think you're doing.
I'm not trying to, you know.
I like how he put that on himself, third person.
Okay. I think this person has got a really good handle on where they are, and is tough. But probably, again, there are times in this practice where you are tough on yourself, and there's times you can let go. I hope this person knows how to let go as well and enjoy themselves. They're probably ready for a good vacation this Christmas. All right, let's go into the body of the definition of persistence. Now let's come back with the concepts, as we said, after we've discussed the practice. Alex, why don't you start us off?
Well, as we look through, we talked a little bit on persistence needing to be guided by discernment. And in the overall discernment, kind of, it's not just a matter of brute force, rather it needs to be guided. And discernment is that ability to kind of guide where we should be or where we should not be persistent. Where should we stick our head down and continue? Where should we lift up and not do it? And that also, you know, we've spoken about it before, your discernment, which is the skillful choice making, is really tied to a determination. So you have a goal, your discernment of choices, what's going to get me closer to that goal, and choosing a skillful choice is what builds upon the persistence. When that skillful choice is made and it's in line, it gives you the fuel to continue making more skillful choices and to continue going down that road. And so discernment can strengthen persistence in three ways. We have the right attitude, the right type of effort, and the right amount of effort.
Okay.
So a little bit of attitude and a little bit of quality and quantity control checks here. So
why don't you take the attitude? I'll take, Carol, can you take the type?
I will.
And I'll take the amount. Go ahead. Shoot.
Okay. And when we talk about right attitude, a lot of that is in some self-talk. And when you're generating an attitude is really, you know,
we saw that in the first letter you read.
We did see that in when you see attitude, it's an inner dialogue with yourself. You're really investigating, you know, which direction you want to go in, what kind of, you know, attitude are you going to need in order to help you, maintain, or persist in the right actions.
Okay.
And the ways to develop the right attitude, we've got a couple of ways to develop it. One is heedfulness, so we can contemplate future dangers, either as getting old or sick, as a way to practice. So as we begin to put out those dangers, we become heedful, continue to look at them. That's a persistence right
there. You see,
there.
That's willing to look at that dismay. Those two emotions we read earlier, is that willing to be to welcome dismay and not avert it? Is part of that heedfulness.
So let's keep in mind all these are developing the right attitude to set us to be persistent. So heedfulness develops the right attitude. Pride, taking joy that we have done well, is going to help continue to keep you with that right attitude.
And there's one that'll definitely work for some of these people that have beaten themselves up.
Absolutely. You know, I went down, I was just really quickly here, I'll say it. I was talking with my wife the other day, and I just... In this really quick way, I went and started listing down, you know, kind of the roles and responsibilities I have and what I've done through my day. And then I stepped back and I said, you know what? Why am I so hard on myself when I literally just heard what I listed to you is are the things that I do and the things I take joy out of? And it's like, why am I hard on myself here? Look what I've accomplished in my day here today. You know, and so immediately when I gave myself that pat, I kind of puffed out my chest and said, you know what, you've done well. That built up an attitude, and then I was able to go.
Excellent.
Another one, the committee of the mind. By looking and breaking up our thoughts into committee members, we can bubble up unruly members and begin to shoot holes in their arguments.
And that's just such a skillful way of breaking up that fixed identity we think we are into multiple parts.
Yes.
You just take away all that rough edges saying, this is who I am and this is what I expect of myself.
I absolutely love the committee of the mind. For those of you who don't recognize that whole term, that's we kind of... put a visualization to the conversation going on upstairs, and we imagine it being this committee sitting in a boardroom all around a table, and of course
different desires,
you know, who's at the head of that table, who's ordering everybody to come to the boardroom and to have a discussion. You have all these thoughts that come up, I want to speak, you know,
it's a great tool for reflective thinking.
Absolutely. When you do that visually, and then you can reflect on those members in the mind.
Well, because you shifted from dealing with the outer world to actually looking at your inner mind's workings and listen to the mind before you act out of the assumption that you are your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very skillful way to break it down.
And when you bring that clarity to the forefront of what's going on upstairs, you generate an attitude of, I can do this. Look where I'm drilling down on. So last two ones here are compassion and confidence. Compassion first for ourself, kind of like the pride, to be able to kind of reflect on yourself and say it's okay. And compassion to exert willingness to stand under our stress.
Boy, you let that let it go, that pat on the back.
Yeah.
The free ride, you went by that one real quick.
Yeah, I mean, first for ourselves, compassion. You know, when I think of compassion, a lot of it, and to be fair, my compassion is a lot of outward compassion.
Right.
And you can see it in there.
That was a little tug of war we were having earlier.
So, but that's okay. That's my prerogative. Confidence is the last one. Learn to develop some faith or conviction in the process. And so, like I said, these all help develop the right attitude to strengthen your persistence. So with that, I'll pass it over to the right type of effort.
Well, the right type of effort comes back to what we've spoken about before. It's intention, action, and result. As far as preventing unskillful mind qualities before they arise, abandoning unskillful mind qualities when they arise, and then developing skillful mind qualities that haven't yet arisen. So we're looking in the rearview mirror at past actions and learning from them, investigating, reflecting. Then we're going to look present and see that we can abandon them as they arise, discernment. And then going forward, how we're going to make that choice.
Excellent.
Okay.
Very good.
It's a good way of looking at it.
And you keep doing it. It's like driving a car. Like when you first learned to drive a car, the instructor said, you look the side view, the rear view, the side view. You keep scanning all the way around. That's what this right type of effort is. You're constantly scanning to keep everything.
So you're dealing in all three aspects of time.
Absolutely.
Present, future.
That's where you're going to get your most leverage.
And you're learning from your mistakes as you go.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Right, take it away.
Nothing more, that's the right type of effort. That's a skillful effort.
You want to do the right amount?
We've got only 60 seconds left. So, you know, we've been talking about the right amount all along, and the fact that the right amount is a function of conditions of other things, that it's fueled by conviction, you know, and then on the other side of persistence is paying attention to what's going on and persistently doing that. That's where persistence needs to be pointed, in my opinion, is towards the present moment as much as we can, because the present moment is where clarity is and best decision-making comes about. So if you're going to be persistent about anything, it's returning to the present moment in a non-judgment way on yourself, but being mindful of your actions, as you just said, Karen. Look at your actions, past, present, and future, and learn from them. And all you folks, take it easy on yourself out there.
Yeah, it's...
It makes no sense to beat yourself
okay.
up.
It's okay.
Okay, well, another week has gone by, and we flew by with persistence. And I guess next Tuesday will be a little Christmas show, so maybe we'll do something different.
We'll see.
What do we got next week? What are we covering next week? We're covering...
That would be the first of the generosity, right?
Okay.
We'll be the first to
Let
go quality. Time for letting go.
Very, very timely.
Yes.
Very good.
Time for Christmas. Absolutely, Alex. Okay. Thanks a lot tonight, folks. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Have a great week.
Have a good laugh.
Yes.
Hope we...
put in some more appreciations and gratitudes in the journal so we can read them next week.
Appreciations and gratitudes, even though it's Christmas week. Stay persistent with us.
I was just going to say
it. Or listen to Carol, be true to yourself and get them done.
we're going to have a talk. I can hear it.
Take care.
Enjoy your practice.
Bye-bye.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.